From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, May 18th, 2017. And on this day, Portland tries a new approach to dealing with the city's panhandlers. And the Trump administration is reviewing national monument designations all over the country. But some in the area of the new Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument say they will fight for it. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The Trump administration, as we've heard, plans to review many of the national monument designations carried out in the Obama years, including Maine's Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Governor Paula Page says the monument and its potential to become a national park pose a real threat to Maine's forest products industry. A.J. Higgins traveled to Millinocket recently, where he found some monument supporters, including local businesses, who are fighting back.
Good morning, Northwood Real Estate. Well, good morning.
Dan Cochran says that a year ago, hours would sometimes pass before the phone would ring at his Northwoods Real Estate Company in Millinocket. But that was before President Obama accepted more than 87,000 acres from Burt's Bees philanthropist Roxanne Quimby as a national monument to be administered by the U.S. National Park Service. Now Cochran says the phone rings more, and he's had to hire three people to keep up with the real estate inquiries.
When the national monument was designated, everything changed. Instead of us calling them, they were calling us. Within 2 weeks, we started getting calls from brokers representing national retailers interested in locating in this area.
But Republicans in Washington, eager to undo some of the Obama legacy, continue to push. And on a trip to the nation's capital 2 weeks ago, Governor LePage testified against the monument before the Federal Land Subcommittee of the House Natural Resources Committee. In his remarks, LePage said that the tourism industry in Maine is largely confined to the South.
The growth of the state of Maine is on the coast, and between May 31st and Labor Day, we will have 40 million visitors, but they will be to the coast. Very few are going to be in the Mosquito area.
For some residents of Millinocket, the governor's message to Congress fell flat. Monument supporters have been celebrating an uptick in economic activity, something that many business owners say they haven't seen since the former Great Northern Paper Company shut its doors 9 years ago.
I was appalled to hear our governor describe the beautiful Katahdin region as a mosquito area. He had nothing good to say about the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument.
Katahdin Area Chamber of Commerce President Gail Fanjoy says LePage's comments about the Millinocket area before a national audience shocked the chamber's members. And it prompted local business owners to hold a press conference last week to let Maine and the rest of the nation know that many former opponents of the monument are now supporters and that the once divided communities in the area are coming together.
8 months after the establishment of the monument, the region has come together and is healing. It is ready to move forward to a new and prosperous future. The efforts of the federal and state government are counterproductive to our progress.
John Ellis, whose family operates two markets in the region, is one local resident whose position on the monument has evolved. Ellis's family lost its camp when Quimby purchased the land that would ultimately be given to the National Park Service. He says he understands how anyone in the area who had to forfeit a place they loved had a right to be bitter about the monument, but Ellis says that before he died, his late father urged his sons to resist those ill feelings.
I remember distinctly he said, "Boys, it's time to move on. It's time to move forward and embrace this opportunity for our community and to go forward. We need to move beyond the past."
Ellis and Dan Corcoran acknowledge that there is still some entrenched opposition to the monument proposal that is now 1 week into a 60-day written comment period. They see it as an impediment to the future return of industry and to traditional recreation uses such as hunting, fishing, and snowmobiling. But opponents in Millinocket seem to be keeping a low profile as the new federal review of the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument gets underway. One man who had posted a no-park sign on his lawn declined to talk about his position. Millinocket native Robert Frost, who hangs a pro-monument banner on his front porch, says opponents tend to keep to themselves.
It's a nitpick group, you know. A bunch of people get together over coffee at the house or a restaurant or something, they'll talk about it. This community here, it's hard to change, and they still think in the back of their minds that that mill's going to come back, and it's not.
John Hafford believes that as more time passes, the monument's critics will begin to see the benefits of the monument. Hafford and his wife, Jessica Massey, run Design Lab, a Millinocket graphic design and marketing firm that is in the forefront of the pro-monument movement.
Is people just want to move on, you know, and they know, they've seen the traffic that happened last fall. They see the investment that's happening. They see houses being bought up in the region everywhere. And people get it. And also they see a bunch of people trying to be positive. And, you know, that's infectious.
Maine's monument is included with more than 24 others on the Federal Review list. More than 2,100 people have so far offered their written comments to the Department of the Interior. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
On any given day, all year round, but especially in the warmer weather, panhandlers work the curbs and corners of Portland, cardboard signs broadcasting their need for a little help. After an unsuccessful effort to crack down on panhandling a few years ago, the city is trying a more benevolent approach. Fred Bever reports.
Derek Cody is a Portland native who's been on the streets for a while. Heroin and a partner's death, he says, have contributed to his homelessness for the past 5 years. He brings in a few dollars each day, standing on a median strip.
This is the best spot right here.
When things are going well, Cody says he and other panhandlers can make some decent cash at choice spots like this intersection, where commuters' cars line up on their way to and from the highway that transects the city. And he adds, they share the territory.
No, we work it out. Like, I'll stay for a couple hours, and when I'm satisfied, I'll wave him over. Like, he's waiting for this spot. I usually stay and make about 30, 40 bucks in a couple hours.
4 years ago, panhandlers like Cody were under siege, with business owners and residents in this booming mini-metropolis loudly complaining to City Hall about proliferating and aggressive begging. City officials responded by banning panhandling for the medians, calling it a public safety issue. The courts called it a free speech issue and threw the ordinance out on constitutional grounds. Now, instead of the back of its hand, the city is offering a helping hand.
It's a homeless person, makeshift campsite, cardboard beds.
Just a few weeks ago, Peter LaRoche's chief income came from panhandling, one legacy of his struggles with homelessness and addiction. But now, he's wielding a trash grabber and a big yellow rubberized bag, working 2 days a week cleaning up the city's many green spaces, including this strip of parkland that surrounds the city's back cove. And as part of its new Opportunity Crew project, the city is paying him its minimum wage, $10.68 an hour. That's more, LaRoche says, than he can make on the medians.
Extra money in my pocket to help me out. And, you know, and help the environment as well. And we get fed breakfast and lunch, so that's definitely a bonus. I'm actually a bigger part of the community than I, you know, was back when I was in a hard spot.
LaRoche and a friend, both sporting bright green Opportunity Crew safety vests, are the first recruits to the pilot program. On-site manager Matt Pryor, who has a long history working with Portland's homeless, says he hopes to round up enough recruits to staff the program with 5 or 6 people, 2 or 3 days a week, and spruce up the city.
We've been out here for 3 days so far. We've gotten, I think we got 30 bags of trash so far, just removed from, I think, 4 sites. Obviously, the end goal is to help people get maybe more long-term employment and not be counting on 2 or 3 days a week that they can work with me.
Pryor says he has more recruits in line, and they should be ready to go soon, once they iron out problems getting access to birth certificates and state IDs they need to get paid, a barrier that Pryor says many of the city's panhandlers face. He's also acting as a nexus to connect them with shelter, addiction, mental health, and other services. The effort marks a contrast to the national trend. According to a recent report by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, the number of cities that bar panhandling altogether has risen by more than 40% over the last decade, and more than 60% of U.S. cities now prohibit the practice in at least some public places. Still, a few, including Denver, Chicago, San Jose, and now Portland, are taking their cue from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and its mayor, John Barry.
Sometimes the easiest way is just to prohibit things, but the punitive approach isn't working, and we're certainly not getting to the root of the problem.
2 years ago, Barry, a Republican, pioneered Albuquerque's There's a Better Way program, sending a van around town to recruit panhandlers to gather garbage and other debris. Since then, he says, the recruits have put in 2,000 workdays, cleaned up nearly 500 city blocks, removed 130 pounds of trash, and it being Arizona, tumbleweeds, and connected more than 250 people to permanent work. Perhaps just as importantly, Barry says, the program has solicited community donations and received nearly $60,000 in response.
So not only are we giving people the dignity of work, helping connect them to the services at the end of the day, paying them cash, building them up as human beings, but we're also telling our community we can do better if we work together.
Portland officials plan to follow suit. Through public signage and other means, they hope to get public donations too, and eventually expand the program's $42,000 budget to enable a five-day-a-week work effort. They also say they don't expect to end panhandling in the city anytime soon, but they do hope to create a new tool to improve the quality of life of all who walk and drive the city's streets. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that is This Day in Maine for Thursday, May 18th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.